Welcome everyone to Then Now Whatever, the Wrestling Podcast, episode 49. I'm your host for Dr. Among Men, Duncan Joyce. I'm joined once again by the hardest working Triple H mark in show business, it's Mr. Kyle Cambry.
Hello, welcome to the show.
How are you doing, Kyle?
I'm doing good, thanks. We'll break kayfabe slightly, but I think this is a record recording two shows in a week.
We did our New Year 2016 ones back to back.
Oh, did we?
Yeah, World of Sport and the end of year review, we both did on the same day.
Oh, well, I tell you what, that's some going from 2016 to now to be able to squeeze in what we can, but it's good to get back on the road to our tape trader diaries.
I'm glad you brought this up though, Kyle, because like you say, it's not been a week since we've recorded. And you're already on telly again. What's this about? Tell the audience.
Oh, yeah. So this is a secret project, really. It's more of a serious project. There's been huge dealings over the last 30, 40 years with how women are treated in the Met Police. And there was a report that was written. ITV were asked to do a documentary. Just the documentary is a famous running documentary called Exposure, similar to what BBC do with Panorama. And they ran something to coincide with the report about the Met Police and how women are mistreated in the Met Police. And they released some documentaries. And I play one of the policemen that, let's say, wasn't very nice to the police women in the force. Wasn't a great watching back and seeing how it was, but I felt like they filmed it very well and very delicate. And yeah, you can find that on the ITV Hub, which is now renamed ITVX.
Yeah, very timely. Good that you're a part of this, Kyle.
It's really sort of opened my eyes to all the goings on and things like that. We were given lots of things to read and watch and a few emails of like information. And, you know, we were asked to keep it all quiet before it came out because they wanted to sort of drop it unannounced without this sort of build up, just to not surprise people, but they didn't want any sort of hearsay, if you will, just get it out there.
Back to fictional unpleasant roles, though. I've not talked to you about Red Rose yet, have I?
No, you haven't. Yeah, no, another unpleasant role. So it's like an app controls what you do and controls how you like sort of think. And it's quite good, actually, because it's quite relatable to society today in a sense that social media controls the way that some people sort of view life. Yeah, you can go on this app and you can sort of send messages and this mysterious force will message you back and you can watch other people and all sorts of stuff. I ended up being one of the creeps that watches this app and watches people do things. And yeah, I get a bit of a clap going on, scaring this poor young lady in the tunnel in Bolton Town Centre.
You ever get worried about being typecast?
Well, I mean, like you say, these last two roles, I'm hoping. Although in the middle, the hotel manager's been in the middle of the two, so
Yeah, that's just thought I'd bring it up again because it's about to come on Netflix.
It's fantastic to get Bolton on the map. And the idea that it was written and directed and filmed by two local lads from Thornleigh, again, just shows how much talent we've got in Bolton and getting stuff out there.
My mum, she's been watching Happy Valley, it's been on recently. It's set in Yorkshire or whatever, but that's another thing that's filmed in Bolton. And like, she spots all the local spots, she's like, oh, that's my bus stop on telly, Dunk.
Yeah, people coin Bolton as being the Hollywood of the Northwest, you know, as a bit of sort of a side joke. But BBC, ITV, Channel 4, Netflix, Sky, they're all using us, so that, you know, we must be doing something right.
Yeah, another Bolton recommendation I have is Alma's Not Normal. Kathy and I really enjoyed that series.
Well, talking of Alma's Not normal. I auditioned for a role in that show.
Ah.
And the role that I auditioned for, now after watching the show and thoroughly enjoying the show, I'm less upset and less frustrated that I didn't get the role. As the role eventually went to the legend that is Dave Spikey, so...
Wow, okay.
You know what? Dave's a legend around Bolton, so it was brilliant. It was really, really good.
Wow, they must have had a broadcasting sheet then.
Yeah.
Quite a few thousand hundred miles away from Bolton is Charlotte, North Carolina, which is home to our episode of WWF Raw that we're looking at today. It's from the 19th of November 2001. It's the night after Survivor Series 2001. It's from the Charlotte Coliseum, and it scored a 4.8 Nielsen rating, which apparently equates to roughly 7.2 million viewers.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, lots of people used to watch TV. I had to laugh at the episode description of this on the network. It starts off with, "The Alliance and their sordid invasion is no more." There's quite a few things about the WWF that can be described as sordid, but don't know about the Alliance invasion.
Yeah.
I can't remember. Did you just have it recorded or did I ask you for it? I think I asked you for it.
Yeah, I think this was around the time where we sort of got into a bit of a trend of having recordings passed back and forth. So I think we were sort of in the midst of that.
Yeah, because Heat on 4 was getting later and later in the schedules, so I was getting a bit starved of WWF content, and by the end of the year, I'd been completely deprived of it, so we really got into a rhythm after that. There's going to be a lot of our episodes from this time frame I look forward to. We start the show with the old, the world leader in sports entertainment theme being brought back as like the opening signature in celebration of the WWF's victory, and then we're shown an edited version of the intro to Survivor Series that's got select highlights from the main event and the closing moments, with Kurt's shocking turn and Vince's celebration kind of interspliced in there. Then we cut to footage from earlier today of WWF Commissioner Mick Foley, and he's staying true to his word and is waiting for Vince's corporate jet at the airport. Vince is well into the fruit platter that he's got on his jet.
Oh, absolutely.
What does he want? A chair on the jet named after him? It's guys like him who sacrificed to enable Vince to buy it in the first place. And Vince agrees. That's a hell of an idea. How about the Dude Love Toilet? Do you share the notion that Dude Love is the worst Mick Foley gimmick?
Yes, absolutely. But I don't know how you feel about my rating. My rating actually goes Cactus Jack, Mankind, Dude Love, and my 1, 2, 3.
Ah, yeah, okay. You could almost split Mankind in two, really.
Yeah.
In fairness, like you have the early kind of disfigured piano guy and then the kiddie-friendly guy that's been liberated from corporate life.
Yeah, I suppose so, yeah.
Yeah, no, I could go for Cactus Jack as top. He's kind of like the final boss for Mick Foley, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
Foley says Vince has made him fall out of love with wrestling and he doesn't want to be commissioner anymore, so he resigns. Vince then tries to fire him instead, so Mick says he can do it if it makes him feel better because the outcome's the same. He's no longer part of the WWF and doesn't have to answer to Vince. And that's not a bad thing, that's a good thing. But instead, Vince eats more fruit and tells Mick to take care. Good luck. And have a nice day.
Then he completely disappears then, doesn't he, Mick?
Yeah, legitimately, this was Foley's exit from the company. He had a whole bunch of frustrations, especially around when he was promoting his second book and some of the to us. If you read the Hardcore Diaries, he brings this up a lot. At one point when he was WWF commissioner, he legitimately had gripes about being in this role and then Vince coming back in the storyline, like, literally weeks later. They did a show at Nassau Coliseum, Long Island, his home, and didn't use him whatsoever.
Jeez.
So that really griped him. There's a lot of misgivings about hometown people and their use, but that's definitely like the lowest that you can get. How can you be such an afterthought? How can you treat such a legend as an afterthought?
It was sort of a running trend with Vince, and, you know, not just with Mick, but with a few people, you know, for a few legends.
Foley, I know he said in the past, like, he really wished he would have stayed in this commissioner role, but the way he was brought back here, it's definitely not in line with what he viewed the role as being and the way it was when he was in the prime of his role the year before.
Yeah.
Finally, we hit the opening theme and the pyro. Note as well that the show is just back to being Raw, and not Raw is War, because we're post 9/11 here. JR introduces the show on his own and says he's no idea who is going to join him.
Ominous.
Vince then comes out to the ring. Get used to this. JR speculates over Kurt Angle's actions and initially calls them unwarranted before concluding, "Thank God for Kurt Angle." I think that most days, to be honest. I saw a clip today of when he angle slammed Mae Young. I don't know if that cropped up on your Twitter too, Kyle.
I don't think so.
It's fucking hilarious. I think it must have been when he was European champion. And he did the slam, and then he went like full-blown 2000s Kurt Angle celebrations. He did the spinning, woo, and then he dropped to his knees. Like, ah, yes, I did it. Like he won the gold medal. I mean, stitches. Vince insists it's a night of celebration, and we owe a debt of gratitude to Kurt Angle for killing the Alliance. He declares that the title that The Rock possesses, which is the only remnant of WCW, will now simply be called the World Championship. How uninspired.
Yeah. At this time, you sort of find that because they're top dogs, they've bought WCW, you know, there's no need to sort of think outside of the box. They can just run with whatever they want because, hell, who's the competition? What does it matter if it sucks to everyone else?
Right, lots of things are slipping through the cracks like this, and it reeks of a placeholder. Apparently tonight we will have the first member of the Vince McMahon Kiss My Ass Club, which will be one member of the Alliance who can have their job back if they'll literally kiss his ass. All joy.
Amazing.
He also reveals every Alliance member that holds a WWF championship already has a job, and that includes the Alliance leader, Stone Cold Steve Austin, who he has grand plans for. He addresses the empty chair next to JR, and out of benevolence, he invites Paul Heyman to come on down, and Heyman is absolutely full of it, grinning away like a Cheshire cat.
I love it. And I love his, like, walk that he does.
Whereas the previous night he was wearing an ECW cap, today he is wearing a WWF Attitude cap and yells at JR, "I got away with it!" before Vince invites him into the ring. He appreciates people who speak their mind, so as a First Amendment advocate, he informs Paul, "You're fired!" So, unfortunately for Paul, Vince McMahon is a free speech absolutionist in the way that Elon Musk is a free speech absolutionist.
Very much so.
JR declares, "Thank God! Good riddance to bad rubbish!" Paul challenges Vince to a fight, but then thinks better of it when the jacket comes off. So instead, he dives over the table at JR, but he's met with clubbing blows to the back, and you can literally hear 6 months of frustration coming out of JR. He's like... Security carry Heyman out, and Vince introduces his replacement, Jerry the King Lawler. His timing here is par excellence. He comes out of the entrance to cackle like a hyena just as Heyman is getting dragged through the curtain. Brilliant. Big revelations to open up already, Kyle?
Yeah, great start to the show.
This is the end of Paul Heyman on commentary. Do you have any favourite Heyman moments as a commentator?
I wouldn't say I've got a favourite specific moment. However, I absolutely loved his energy. He would say all the unpopular stuff, and he, essentially, he's a poor man's Pat McAfee.
That's going to cause some controversy, I think.
No, do you get where I'm coming from, though? In the fact that there's no way that Pat has a script. He says what he wants, and back then, that was Heyman. You know, Heyman was let loose on commentary, and it was brilliant.
Oh, yeah, for sure. They're kind of comparable in terms of energy, and they channel it in different purposes. Like, Pat's all about enjoying the show, and Paul's all about antagonising JR, really.
Yeah.
I adored him during the Duchess Queensberry Rules match. We looked at a few episodes ago, and he was trying to claim that he knew all the rules. It's just brilliant shithousery there. It's see, it says right here, JR. My Uncle Moise and the Peeping Tom hooked me up. It's fabulous, Heenan-esque. On to our first match of the night, and it's for the WWF Women's Championship. The champion Trish Stratus is defending against Lita, who's accompanied by Matt Hardy. We're shown clips of Matt and Trish coming out of the same locker room at suspiciously close intervals back at the Survivor Series, with commentary stressing that it's not a co-ed locker room. Technical hitches abound here. The Titantron is frozen, so it displays Lita mid-pointing during Trish's entrance.
Yeah, I noticed that.
The chain wrestling at the start goes a bit wrong, so Lita just spears Trish for a two count. Then there's a tremendous sunset flip that gets the same. Lita fires up with a clothesline and a flapjack for two. She walks right into the chick kick, but dodges the second rope elbow, only for her moonsault to be countered by Trish pushing Lita off the top and into the barricade. As Matt consoles her, Trish hits a baseball slide on both of them. Matt eventually rolls Lita back in the ring, even though she's still totally out of it, and Trish capitalises with a backslide for the free count to retain her title after 2 minutes and 45 seconds. Quick match here. Any thoughts on this one, Kyle?
I completely forgot how bad up-and-coming Trish Stratus was. There was quite a few botches in this from both participants. That wrist lock right at the front, you know, the beginning of the match, that was a botch and a half. But then it sort of picked up its pace. We got quite a lot of nice stuff, and then it slowed itself down again. Knowing how good these two become, for me, it wasn't the greatest match.
No, I completely agree. This is a pretty forgettable way to spend a few minutes with a couple of legends. You know, it was pacey but sloppy. I'm also not a fan of them muddying what should be a very simple story for Trish. She's the woman who's finally starting to come into her own in the ring and prove herself as champion. And they're just making her this pawn in the dissension between Matt and Lita. It's a bit awkward. We see the remnants of the Alliance backstage. Hardcore champion Rob Van Dam, Immunity Battle Royal winner Test, the European champion Christian, and the unified tag team champions, the Dudley Boys, who still have both sets of belts, along with their manager Stacy Keibler. Vince greets them and quickly focuses in on Rob Van Dam, turning down his initial invitation to join the Federation. So, since he's the hardcore champion and likes to do things the hard way, his match is up next. A, quote, handicap tag team tables match versus the Dudley Boys. Bit of a oxymoron there. Who's Rob Van Dam got to tag?
Yeah, very odd.
Christian shares his pride at being European champion, but Vince tells him to clear off. And then we cut to commercial, and when we return, we get a shot of the parking lot, anticipating the arrival of WWF champion Stone Cold. Match number two, the aforementioned handicap tag team table match, pits the hardcore champion Rob Van Dam against the tag team champions the Dudley Boys, accompanied by Stacy Keibler. Van Dam is categorically in the worst singlet I have ever seen him in. No airbrushing, just red initials and a dragon against black tights. What the hell?
Yeah, not good.
This is Shawn Michaels' brown pants level.
Yeah.
Of cringe. King's reaction to seeing Stacy for the first time is totally predictable.
Yeah.
He asks JR where she's from. Presumably not the Virgin Islands.
It's incredible how much he used to get away with.
I know. JR points out that she's not married and he lets out a big woohoo! Settle down, Jerry. Devon jumps Rob Van Dam when he's mid-handshake with Bubba, but then Rob somersaults out of the backdrop with a double springboard crossbody. Devon then accidentally clotheslines Bubba and eats a rolling thunder. Bubba recovers. Try and say that five times quickly. But Bubba recovers with the Bubba Bomb. The Human Torch was denied a bank loan.
I'm impressed. You did well then.
Thank you. Devon hit a massive neckbreaker out of the corner, which blocked off an RVD springboard. And then Bubba gets the tables. That's the wrong way round. Van Dam avoids the 3D, gets a chair, and levels Bubba with a Van Terminator to big RVD chance. He flips out of Devon's reverse DDT, kicks him onto the table, and heads up top. And despite there being another table in between him and Devon, he nearly frog splashes Devon through the table. But Devon moved. Holy shit.
Watching that, he was never making that. I'm sorry. I get that he's very athletic, but holy hell, that would have been the longest five-star frog splash I've ever seen.
I wouldn't put it totally past him, but yeah, it sure was ambitious. Van Dam absolutely face-planted himself through that table. And JR is at pains to point out it doesn't count because it wasn't a Dudley that put him through the table. So the Dudleys try to 3D him through the other table, and the table didn't break. Luckily, the second time's a charm, and the Dudleys win after 4 minutes and 27 seconds. Another quick one, but a very easy watch. Wasn't anything going wrong until you hit the finish, really. The setup to the finish with Van Dam leapfrogging the table was cool, and as always, he has this fun escapology, but Vince got to prove his point in the end, because this show is all about Vince.
Yeah, pretty much. I felt that the rating of this match was Van Dam pretty much earned it on his own. Not saying that the Dudleys didn't do anything, but Van Dam's landings and stuff like that sort of made the match. They were pretty horrific, especially the frog splash where his head hit the table. You know, they were quite horrific lands. It was an easy watch, but sort of missable at the same time.
Yeah, totally. You don't need to see this match again necessarily, but I don't feel any worse off for having watched it.
No.
Kurt Angle has arrived at the arena. A staffer asks how he's doing. He's the man that single-handedly saved the World Wrestling Federation. He's doing great. He then gets directions to Rock's locker room, and that sends us to the commercial. We come back from commercial with Linda McMahon greeting diners at WWF New York, possibly asking for refunds. Kurt finds The Rock. Rock says he didn't want nor need Kurt's help, and asks why nobody else knew about Kurt's mission. Kurt goes, "Well, Mr. McMahon said," and Rock, in like the audible version of that SpongeBob meme, is like, "Hey, Mr. McMahon!" The Rock says for 1 month long, Kurt decked everyone in the WWF with chairs just to get his selfish moment. And Kurt owns it. It's like, yeah, don't you think it was worth it? Rock does admit that it's worth it. And so now that the WWF's saved, why not try and beat up The Rock tonight? Angle says that, yeah, he'll do it and he'll do it for fun. And then Rock calls Kurt not a saviour, but an asshole.
He's not the Messiah! He's a very naughty boy!
I found that little segment really weird because, unless I missed it, The Rock doesn't actually accept the challenge. It's just sort of implied that's happening.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of threw out the challenge to begin with.
No, sorry, I mean for the title.
Oh, right. Yeah, no mention of the title at all here.
It's just like, what?
We'll see more of it as the show goes along. I'm not 100% a fan of this narrative for Kurt Angle.
No.
I didn't want to boo Kurt Angle. He saved the WWF. I still think he had more juice in him as a babyface, you know?
Absolutely. But he does play a hell of a heel.
Oh, yeah. He is terrific. Shane and Stephanie arrive in the parking lot, and Stephanie is aghast that they had to drive themselves. They speculate why Vince wants them here in the first place and enter the arena. Oh, here's your confirmation, Kyle. Vince is in the ring and he books the match and makes it a world title match.
Ah, I must have missed that little bit. Yeah, I was just like, this is really random. I get that they're having a match, but I don't remember the title being like a go-ahead.
Yeah, just a throwaway line, but, you know, at least it is in there. He says it's unfortunate that Austin isn't here, and he invites Shane and Stephanie to the ring without any music or fanfare, because, you know, they're not a part of the company anymore. King speculates if they're joining the club. Give it another 5 years for Shane.
Yeah.
Vince says he's proud to hear the arena chant slut at his daughter.
I mean, I understand that this is all fictional, and I completely understand that these are sort of a character that is magnified, but what the hell, Vince? I enjoy the audience calling you a whore. Oh, yeah. Jesus Christ.
It's encouraging the fans to carry on doing it for a laugh, but this is the kind of fan behaviour that really affected Stephanie.
Yeah.
And her approach to even mentoring other women that are coming to the company. I kind of got the impression that because she endured this and she was convinced that this was for the good of the business, that other people's booking concerns weren't necessarily treated with the regard that they possibly deserved.
Yeah.
Shane congratulates Vince and admits that he lost to the better man and just leaves. Steph is far more grovelling and regrets listening to Shane. She pins the whole alliance on Shane himself, including the plot where Stephanie slapped Linda and telling Vince that she wants him to die. Daddy, I love you! All I can think about is on The Simpsons, when they have Love Day and they're like full of rubbish or whatever, and Lord Huggington, the bear, is in the bin and they're just stamping on it like,
I love you. I love you.
I feel like that's the kind of reception that Steph's going to get now.
Yeah.
Vince is unconvinced and calls security. Get this woman out of my ring! They have to drag her away from Vince's leg as he declares, say goodbye to daddy's little girl! If you didn't clock who the star of the show was supposed to be on this night, you should have a pretty good idea by now. Anything else to add to this one, Kyle?
No. Other than it was probably Vince's idea wanting a family member to tell him they wished he would die. Again, weird. Vince, weird. There are my notes, unfortunately, for Vince, because especially this Raw episode, he is off the edge.
I feel like it's another occasion, and probably a couple more of these tonight, where it's too much of a victory lap and not enough of a statement or an assurance of the direction of the show going forward.
Yeah, I feel like you can definitely tell that they pressed the reset button, but you don't sort of get any confirmation of what that reset is. Or you essentially, all you get all night is Vince going, "Reset!" But then nothing. That's it.
Right. Yeah. From a viewer's standpoint, they've essentially half the roster. As a kid, I wasn't necessarily thinking about this. I was just like, all right, okay, finally, we can get back to normal now. That was the big thing that I was looking forward to. Okay, it can feel like the WWF again. They've not got this weird inner faction war or whatever.
It doesn't feel like the WWF for me until 2002.
I wonder what that's about.
But I digress.
After the break, Vince is backstage on the phone explaining the Kiss My Ass Club to someone, and he's interrupted by Chris Jericho. Vince wants an explanation for his attack on The Rock last night, and Jericho admits that his ego got the best of him and apologises. Vince isn't convinced by the sincerity of the apology and doesn't like guys with big egos. They need massive egos instead. He lets Jericho know that tonight he's wrestling Kane. The car park is still empty. And then we see future WWF Hall of Famer Mr. T is sat at ringside, wearing a 1-800 Collect shirt.
I completely forgot where I was and what time frame this was when Mr. T popped up, because I was like, why, he's looking good for his age. And then I realised what year we were, and I was like, oh, well, he was looking good then, yeah.
Probably should, yeah. Yeah, I had no memory of this at all from when you first taped it for me. The first time I truly remember seeing this was, I think it was the 15th anniversary Raw set, and they were like, hey, Raw is full of celebrities. Here are all these people, and it showed him in the crowd. They were like, whoa, Mr. T was back, and that looks like when I would have been watching a lot. How do I not remember this? Anyway, that puts us roughly halfway through the show, so it's halftime question time. Seeing as all we've seen, Mr. T, Kyle, favourite celebrity cameos in the WWF?
Ooh. Well, it's always good seeing Chuck Norris in the crowd. Growing up, I used to watch loads of Chuck Norris stuff with my dad. So when he popped up in the crowd, that was always a thing to pull my dad in. My dad's one of these who, unless The Rock is wrestling, which is never at the moment, you can't seem to pull him in unless he knows someone. So like, Chuck Norris is out, Chuck Norris! What? Oh, rubbish. Stephen Amell. I really enjoyed that sort of dive in with the Red Arrow. Unfortunately, it was sort of Cody's last little bit with Stardust. So that sort of takes the shine off a little bit. The Jackass stuff. That was really fun with Sammy. And it was really interesting on Austin's podcast how he was saying, you know, that he had so much fun with that. Some people kind of automatically go, oh God, you've got Sammy in a gimmick match, you're wasting him, blah, blah, blah. Where, you know, Sammy himself was like, I actually loved that and really wanted to be a part of that.
He should defend that match. It was brilliant. Like, the execution of it was fabulous. Probably my favourite match from that second night show.
Yeah.
It's a masterclass.
I suppose the big one that gets all the praise, and I believe he's coming back to do more this year, Bad Bunny. You know, I felt he sort of slipped in there as though he'd been wrestling for years. You know, he did really good spots and he did a really good job.
Yeah, very good. I was getting into a debate with someone earlier about The Miz's booking. I'm like, well, they're clearly putting stock in him. They're putting him with like the most famous people they collaborate with, and the person was not convinced that was of value. I'm like, oh, come on, mate, come on.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, if you don't see the value of working with the most streamed artist on Spotify for 3 years running, or like one of the biggest YouTubers in the world, and understand that those are big spots to be put in within that company, then I don't know what to say.
Yeah. The last one that I can think of just off the top of my head, just because I can't think of what ridiculous thing he'd done at the time, he'd really pissed me off. But when Kevin Owens powerbombed Machine Gun Kelly off the stage.
Yes, I could go for that a lot of the time, yeah. Do you remember Michael Clark Duncan, Kyle?
Bless his soul, I do.
My first WrestleMania was WrestleMania 2000, and he was front row for that, and he was super excited to be there. He was super excited to see The Rock, and he just had all this great energy. At one point during the match, he was like getting all pissed off at Triple H, and Triple H flicked his cap off his head.
Yeah, he had like a blue basketball top on, didn't he?
Yeah.
And you know, I'm guessing he was friends with quite a few of the guys in the locker room, because Mark Henry was actually a pallbearer for Michael Clark Duncan's funeral.
Oh, I didn't realise that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I figured there was a pretty strong connection if he'd end up in the... He was in the Scorpion King, wasn't he?
Yes. Yes, he was.
Yeah, okay. So that's my favourite as far as like people being sat in the audience. Another notable participant in terms of actually being in a featured match, Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah, when he knocks Big Show out.
Oh my God. The angle that set that up as well, when he broke for Big Show's nose and it was a shoot, and Big Show fucking pegged it out again. It really pissed me off, because I was reading Power Slam at the time. They were incredulous about them hyping up the Big Show being in the best shape of his career. I'm like, come on, do you remember how bad he was at the end of his ECW run? If you can't see that and compare it to him absolutely pegging it out of the ring to chase Mayweather, and you know, he's lost what? Something like 150 pounds or whatever it was he claimed? If you go through that transformation and you're not able to claim you're in the best shape of your career, then when the hell can you do it? Anyway. Right, seeing as how we're still on the subject of Hollywood, it's on to match number 3, with the World Heavyweight Championship on the line. The Rock, the champion, is defending against Kurt Angle. JR plugs Vengeance, the next pay-per-view, during The Rock's entrance, and the graphics are Sledgehammer themed. I wonder who that's supposed to remind us of.
No idea, but
absolutely clueless.
I've heard he's pretty decent.
Angle opens the match with a slap, and then he downs The Rock with some strikes that are a little bit more legit. Rock fires back with a Samoan drop, only to get sent sailing over the top rope. He always kills that bump. There's an early ankle lock attempt that gets escaped, but the belly-to-belly isn't escaped, which draws Angle Sucks chants from the crowd. He ducks the right hands from The Rock with a series of German suplexes for a two count. Rock then crotches Kurt on the top rope to prevent the moonsault and hits a back superplex. Rock nips up after being clotheslined down and hits a belly-to-belly of his own. Then Kurt runs into the spinebuster, but escapes the Rock bottom and hits the Angle Slam. The ankle lock is locked in, but The Rock rolls it up into a victory roll, and that gets the three count. Rock retains the title after 6 minutes and 3 seconds. Angle beats up The Rock immediately after the match, only to wind up eating The Rock bottom. That cues the arrival of Y2J, who jumps The Rock from behind, allowing Kurt to recover and lock The Rock in the ankle lock. That's another tongue twister for you.
You're doing well with these.
I'm only one drink in. I'll be worse off later on in the night. Jericho then follows up with the Walls of Jericho twice, and the refs have to pull his hair to get him to break the hold. What do you make to this match, Kyle?
I felt like they were just in first gear. I didn't think they got out of first gear. They were sort of just going through the motions and Angle threw in a few suplexes here and there. Rock threw a few moves in here and there. And we got to the end.
I think I was into this a fair bit more than you. It's another pretty short match. But I don't think they put a foot wrong, really. They kept me entertained all the way through.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I don't think they put a foot wrong. On energy levels, I just felt like they knew each other inside out and they were just going through the motions. There was no amping up, play to the crowd. I don't know. I just felt like it was slick, but not energetic as they would normally be.
Now, see, that was enough for me, really. Like, I thought they just mixed really well. The post-match was probably the more important thing here. Again, that's a pretty effective angle. Hey.
Dun, 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 dun.
They're not going to match their peak career moments when they've only got 6 minutes, but I was fine with this.
Yeah.
Oh, look who's in the ring again. It's Vince McMahon.
For the 50 billionth time in this episode.
It's time to reveal who's joining the Kiss My Ass Club. He promises a Kodak moment, and he personally selected William Regal.
Legend.
Regal doesn't understand the gimmick and completely misses the point that he is literally supposed to kiss Vince on the arse. Reluctantly, and as briefly as quietly as possible, Regal agrees to do it. So Vince orders him to get on his knees. That's a good spot right there. It won't hurt.
Do you not think some of these, Vince is at home in bed thinking, oh, what fantasy could I play out on TV? Yes. Kiss My Ass Club. And Linda's like, oh, shh. You can kiss my ass.
Linda, my wife at the time.
Yeah.
Totally, yeah. It's slightly more uncomfortable viewing in light of what we know now.
Yeah.
He drops his trousers and then his underwear and declares, it's a nice looking ass. I can even make my ass do tricks. Watch this. He makes Regal put chapstick on and then Regal puckers and gives Vince a quick peck on the ass. JR questions, how's he even going to return to the United Kingdom? Sure, Jim, I'm sure we've not got any ass kisses over here in England. Well, that's one way to get Regal back on TV.
One thing that I noticed is he gets laughed at by Taz. How has he still got a job?
That's my next question, Kyle. So,
okay.
We get the slow motion replay of the ass kissing. And then Regal freaks out at the back, everyone laughing at him. And then Taz confronts him. Regal tells him, you'd have done the bloody same. Then Taz calls him a kiss ass and gets sucker punched for it. I had the exact same question as you. What is Taz doing here?
He did not survive because he didn't have a belt.
Right.
What the hell?
This won't get resolved until our next episode, I'm afraid. Match number 4 of the night sees Chris Jericho taking on Kane. They replay Jericho's attack on The Rock earlier, and JR tells us that The Rock is getting medical attention. Jericho jumps Kane immediately after his pyro, so if you're on Kane pyro watch, does it before the match, but still gets body pressed face first. Jericho escapes a power slam by hanging Kane's neck up on the top rope and then catapults his throat into the bottom rope. For no apparent reason, someone in the crowd lets off an air horn as Jericho hits a pair of swinging neck breakers.
Mm-hmm.
In a callback to their Survivor Series 2000 match, Kane catches Jericho's lion salt with a goozle, only for referee Teddy Long to somehow get distracted, allowing Jericho to hit a low blow and the bulldog. He gets a chair, only to eat the big boot and a front power slam. Kane goes up top for the top rope clothesline, but gets swatted out of midair with a chair shot for the disqualification. Another to the back follows, and then Jericho goes through a right royal struggle trying to get Kane in the walls of Jericho, which sadly stunts this angle a little bit. He fares even worse on the third time of trying and doesn't even have it on properly by the time the ref breaks it up.
It was a real struggle here. But on the beatdown, where was The Undertaker?
We'll not see resolution of that until next episode again, I'm afraid.
Teeing stuff up here. Come back and watch our next episode for the answers.
Kane's your winner via DQ after only 3 minutes and 6 seconds. I didn't think it was all that bad during the course of the match. The finish was a convincing enough way of Jericho to get this bigger opponent down for a beatdown, but then the post-match really put a dampener on this. You could literally hear people in the crowd laughing at Jericho trying to get this submission on.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. It was a decent match, and like you say, the ending just wasn't great.
Well, totally took the sheen off. Angle's wandering around backstage, annoyed that he didn't win the title, and gagging for some freaking appreciation around here. He bumps into Unified, Intercontinental, and United States Champion Edge. Kurt hopes he feels foolish for calling him yellow last week. Edge points out that his title victory meant that he saved himself, and he accuses Kurt of playing both sides, and that Kurt only did this for himself.
Long-term booking.
That's true enough. Although, if you're bragging about how your title match saved yourself, and then you're calling Kurt selfish for doing an act that's only going to benefit him, when really his act benefited the whole World Wrestling Federation. You can kind of lose the thread here if you think about it a little too hard.
Yeah, I sort of get where Edge is coming from, but yeah.
It's just, again, I wish they wouldn't persist with the Kurt Angle being a heel thing. Mm. Our fifth match of the night.
I was going to say, can we call this a match?
Sees William Regal taking on Taz. Regal's taking off his tie and his jacket, but he's still in his suit as we get another replay of the kiss. JR declares, I don't think Regal would stoop to that level, no pun intended. That's like when people say no offence when they clearly want to offend someone.
Yeah.
No explanation for why ex-Alliance member Taz is even here. He's still in his hockey jersey and brawls with Regal as JR shares a rumour that Taz got retained as a broadcaster for SmackDown. Taz's mission almost gets locked in, but Regal escapes, hits the knee trembler, just as the smoke from Taz's pyro engulfs the entire ring. Regal stretch applied and Taz taps out. Regal takes forever to break the hold, but he's the winner after only 53 seconds. Like you say, Kyle, it's not really a match, it's an angle. How big of a loser do you have to be to lose to the ass kisser?
Unbelievable.
Kurt is sulking in the locker room, and Vince arrives. Kurt reiterates that he lost despite having The Rock beat, and nobody has shown him any appreciation except for Vince. Vince is clutching the WWF Championship and asks him if he wants to be the champion. Obviously, Kurt says yes, so they're out to walk to the ring for our main event Vince segment. Kurt and Vince come out to Kurt's music. Commentary reiterate that Austin is still the champion, but Kurt left the arena last night with the championship after he used it to attack Austin. On behalf of every fan of this arena, Vince thanks Kurt Angle. Since typical Stone Cold has gone AWOL the night after losing, we need a champion with dignity, class, and credibility. It's not quite as catchy as the Three Eyes, but you know.
We'll go with it.
We need Kurt Angle as a World Wrestling Federation champion. He was hoping he could personally strip Austin of the title,
Nevertheless, Kurt, allow me, as the sole owner of the World Wrestling Federation. That cues the theme to 2001 A Space Odyssey. And here is Nature Boy Ric Flair, and 12-year-old me is absolutely hating this.
Yep.
Kyle, you have your own issues with Ric Flair.
Yep.
Talk to me about your reservations with Ric Flair.
Ric Flair now or Ric Flair then?
I mean, both, but definitely then.
Ric Flair then was very much the epitome of WCW. And at the time, being all hail WWF and that's it, I'm not getting involved with anything else. It was sort of like a big eye roll thing of, oh no. You know, I as a fan back then completely bought into this whole notion of WWF, WCW, which is great. They got what they wanted out of me as a fan. But then at the same time, as that fan, I was a bit like, well, we're done with WCW now because we won, right?
Sure.
And then, just to bounce back off that, a similar statement with Rick nowadays. We're done, right? Yeah?
last match ever, promise.
Come on, man. You're a legend in your own right. Stop.
So, my perspective as a WCW fan, but a WCW fan that started watching in 1999, I hated Ric Flair because he was booked like utter dog shit in WCW at that period of time.
Yeah.
My first encounter with him, it must have been a match from like early in 2000, like February or something. He wrestled Hogan. Hogan was like in the really classic trunks and stuff. And the match, it was so strange. It felt like a time capsule of a bygone era, like even back then.
Yeah.
And he was just like this pathetic old man and was frustrating Hulk throughout the match. I'm like, why can't you just beat up this old guy? Like, it made Hulk look shit by proxy. And then, like, the next few angles that I remember seeing of him, he'd wrestle in street clothes. I thought that was really shitty. And he'd win world titles by utter flukes and stuff. I'm just like, what the hell is going on? How is this man a world championship wrestler? Like, he does not look like a world champion.
I mean, you could say that some of Cena's world championship reigns were sort of like, he'd win, he'd lose, he'd win, he'd lose, he'd win, he'd lose, he'd win, he'd lose to bump him up. You could essentially say the same for Ric Flair at this time, you know, to get him those world championship additions, shall we say.
Oh, nothing compares to WCW in 2000, Kyle. Like, I think John Cena broke a sweat for longer than some of Ric Flair's title reigns in 2000. I think there was only two more, but still, it looked pathetic to me. I thought he looked bad and the company looked bad by proxy. And it was wrestling that I openly didn't enjoy. And that's a hard thing for an 11-year-old kid to go through, being like only less than a year into watching wrestling and making him encounter wrestling that he actively dislikes. Flair's got a big old grin on his face. And Vince points out that this is his hometown. But this is my ring, and you're standing in it, and I want an explanation. Flair explains, I bet on a winner last night! Woo! I guess it's a step up from, I don't owe you no explanation.
Yeah.
He challenges Angle as a gold medalist and an ambassador for the sport of professional wrestling, not to just let someone award him the championship and to earn it instead. Yeah, Kyle, what kind of person just gets awarded a world championship?
Bullshit. He earned it. He earned that. Angle does not deserve it compared to where Triple H was at in the company.
I still think being involved in the plot to save the entire company gives you a lot more leverage than winning a plain old number one contenders match and the champion buggering off to another brand. But maybe that's just me.
He was a snake. Angle was playing both sides. That is not a true champion.
Flair reveals that when Shane and Stephanie sold their stock to that consortium... The consortium! He struts and he bounces off the ropes. Was me! And now you and I, we're partners! That cues the arrival of Stone Cold Steve Austin. He levels Kurt and stomps a mud hole and walks it dry. JR informs us, Austin got screwed by Angle last night at the Survivor Series. Yeah, and it saved the World Wrestling Federation. Why are you trying to get us to feel sympathy for Austin for not killing the WWF? He tackles Vince down too. Flair has a hold of the WWF title and lets Austin collect it from him. Austin calls for some beers and has a toast with Flair to close the show. JR with the closing line here. Business has picked up! Business has changed! Vince McMahon and Ric Flair are business partners! Oh my God! And that closes the show.
There's a huge flaw in what Flair says.
All right, then.
Flair says that the stock was sold to him. Well, WCW and ECW were companies. So what stock would they have in WWF if they were a separate entity?
So he's saying Shane and Stephanie, as family members, they owned shares within the WWF. And Shane and Stephanie sold those shares to Ric Flair to fund their purchases of WCW and ECW.
Ah, got you. Okay.
So that's what he was going for here. But it is difficult to comprehend it through the medium of a Ric Flair promo. I will give you that.
Because he actually says the words, I bought it this morning. It's like, what? You bought what this morning? Nobody owns anything now because Shane and Steph have gone.
Yeah. Okay, a bit of a mix-up there.
Yeah, so I was a bit like, what? I mean, back then, that would have flown right over my head. But obviously, re-watching it with a bit more knowledge and a bit more concentration, I was a bit like, nah, that doesn't make any sense.
Right, yeah. There's lots of issues here. I'm sure Austin is thrilled because, oh, the people didn't want to boo me. And now here's his face turn again, but I'd still not forgive in Austin. I'm not going to feel sympathy for him here. It's mixed signals at best.
Yeah, yeah.
The man who saved the WWF is a villain. The man who wanted to kill the WWF is a good guy now. It doesn't match what I wanted and what I was expecting.
No, I agree with that. And I think the whole reset thing, you know, that this was supposed to be a reset, essentially, this episode. You're now drawn back to Austin versus Vince. And essentially Rock versus Jericho going forward. So what sort of reset are we having at the moment?
True enough, yeah. So you got one is returning to the biggest drawing rivalry you've ever had. And the other is literally carrying on the rivalry that you set up earlier in the autumn.
Yeah.
You've got a whole bunch of wrestlers who... in storyline, are not at your beck and call anymore, and you've still got to convince people that you've got an exciting show. I don't think they do that good a job at reintegrating people, shall we say.
No.
Taz is the big case study for that. He's here. There's no explanation offered. They don't figure it out until the next show, which we'll see. Problems abound here. It was a very talky show. Sum it up for us in your thoughts, Kyle. Like I was saying, since it's a talky show, instead of best match, what was your favourite segment overall, and who was your standout performer?
My standout performer, because he didn't seem to get off the screen all night, it was Vince McMahon. And the reason I say that, like you say, it was a very talky-talky show, and he essentially narrated this Raw episode and sort of gave you a glimpse of what was coming up, what's next. And then we got the big slap in the face of you're not as powerful as you sort of think you are at the end. So the segment, as much as back then it was frustrating and me rewatching this knowing it was coming, I'd probably say it's got to be the big pop for Ric Flair. That's sort of the big moment in this episode. And, you know, having him get one over on Vince. The matches wise, there was nothing of note, really. They sort of just happened. Taz and Regal, I'm not considering a match. You know, I think, annoyingly, if you wanted to watch something important in this episode, you only need to watch the last 15 minutes.
Fair point, actually. Yeah. So they've obviously set up a lot of intrigue, and it's kind of historic in that sense. But it's just too incongruous to what I was hoping for as a fan.
Yeah.
It just didn't feel right, this whole episode, really. Like you say, Vince deliberately set up as the star of the show for the most part. He has certain skills as a performer, and he did well in that role. I would like to praise Kurt Angle, even though he is in a role that I really wish he wasn't in. He was doing the best with what he had. Kind of similar to Vince, had interactions with a range of people, Edge, Rock, Flair, you know, everyone. And I liked his world title match with The Rock the best, actually. It's inoffensive enough. It's just two pros walking you through what makes them great and how well they work together. It's not necessarily the most memorable match you're going to see from either man, not even when they're wrestling each other, but it's the most closely aligned with what I would like to see from wrestling television.
Yeah.
So, yeah, mixed messages, lots of stuff up in the air, new faces bringing the story forward. What on earth could happen next? Well, cue our next episode, as we'll be looking at the WWF SmackDown episode from After Survivor Series from the 22nd of November 2001. And we'll hopefully get to see a bunch of the stuff we're confused about get a little bit more light shined on it.
Yeah, looking forward to that. I've just been thinking again, just going back to the Ric Flair thing. If Stephanie and Shane had 25% stakes in the company, then logically that would mean that Vince and Linda had 25 each. Well, Flair would now have 50% control and Vince 25. I was just thinking about it then, because we get our big Rick speech on SmackDown. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, that'll hopefully shed a bit of light. The maths is quite complicated, quite more complicated than it needs to be. I feel like they're still going with Linda. She gave her stocks to Austin when the whole corporate ministry thing went down.
Yeah.
And then Vince and Shane beating Austin meant that they got the stocks. So I feel like the split we're supposed to believe is Vince had 50, Shane and Stephanie had 50 between them in whatever split it was. And Linda is only the CEO in the sense of she is like formally running the company.
Yeah.
Without any ownership.
This could be an episode in itself. Who has the stock? Follow the stock.
Maybe we'll get some more details next episode, but I'm not confident.
No, not at all.
Anyway, that'll wrap it up for this time. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter at TNW Podcast, or on Instagram at TNW_podcast, or give us a like on our Facebook page, and that'll help you keep up with any updates on future episodes. And if you're on Twitter especially, you'll see our grumblings and jokes and yada yada yada. Give us a follow on SoundCloud, or you can listen to the show on Stitcher Radio, Spotify, or subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts. Give us a rating on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts to help us get up that Al Gore rhythm. If you're catching up with our old episodes, you can check out a playlist I made on our SoundCloud page, as well as a playlist of all of my guest appearances on the Raw is Nitro podcast. Sure, by the time this comes out, Lee will still be going through the wars with the archive content, or lack thereof, on Binge, but hopefully we'll get to hook up again. The most recent episode that we had done was the SmackDown and Thunder just before Survivor Series 1999, the one with the Survivor Series match on SmackDown that was really cool. And the next episode would have Arnie on SmackDown, so I'm really fucking desperate to binge, to pull the finger out of their ass and give Lee some archive content so we can carry on, please. So it's a goodbye from Kyle.
Goodbye, thank you for listening.
It's a goodbye from me. I'll catch you down the road.